Welcome back to The Deeper You Dive, a show where we take a deep dive into one record per season. Last episode, we analyzed the third track from Joanna Newsom's East, titled Sawdust and Diamonds. We saw Joanna struggle to corral her own desire, whether it be for her man or her desire to have a child. In what is surely one of the most crushing moments we've heard on the album so far, we saw Joanna express the raw grief of losing either her own child or the dream of having a child. This devastating tune leads us right into the climax of the project, the fourth track of the album, titled Only Skin. Before we begin, we should remember how Joanna said the album was about four specific events that happened in her life, yet there are five songs. This 17-minute track is Joanna's effort at linking all of those events together. Only Skin is not just an impressive feat for Joanna Newsom, but truly a milestone in modern music. Let's dive in.
To see the retreat of their hairless and blind cavalry.
Joanna plucks a string, then another, as the orchestra drops us right into the middle of a scene. This tactic of joining a narrative in the middle of an action is defined in the Latin phrase in medias res. This concept throws the reader or listener right into the thick of things, with context and details to be provided later. Joanna says that there was a booming above you, and we assume that she is referring to her lover. The booming here is a bombing, supported by the reference to airplanes in the following line. That night suggests that this event was dreamed up, and it paints the picture of a war veteran with post-traumatic stress disorder. So often the unfathomable hell that is war leaves soldiers scarred forever, never able to escape the harrowing events they witnessed. And that is how Joanna describes her lover here. It could be that this character was ex-military, but this could also be a way to disclose the traumatic past of this man. What trauma he has endured, we do not yet know. Our narrator then describes the airplanes as beached whales and shelled snails, continuing with the theme of natural versus man-made. Lowing means for an animal to let out a deep sound, like a cow mooing. So these planes shift and bellow like beached whales, an impressive and historic species rendered utterly helpless outside of its element. These massive creatures are immediately contrasted by these shelled snails, small and frail beings. The use of the word shelled relates to the metallic shell of an airplane. Inside both of these shells, there is soft flesh, whether it be snail or man. These similes explore the way that men are out of their element in war. Within each of those death machines lies a man capable of love and empathy. A man on a murder mission for his country is akin to both a powerful yet helpless beached whale, as well as a feeble and sensitive shelled snail. Joanna tells us that the man squinted to see the planes fly off as he had to make sure for himself that they were gone. Cavalry is a term used for troops who fought on horseback, so hairless and blind cavalry personifies airplanes built for war in a way only Joanna Newsom can.
Cavalry, you froze in your sensual, prayed for your poor soul. Sky was a bread roll, soaking in a milk bowl, and when the bread broke, fell in bricks of wet smoke. My sleeping heart woke.
This character is then said to be frozen in his sand shoal, and there's a couple ways to interpret this. A shoal is a large school of fish, so his sand shoal here could be his troops with him on the sand. A shoal is also a sandbar, so the sand shoal here could be a plot of land in the middle of the ocean. With either one of these, we continue the description of this man's battle that is now on the beach where he freezes in terror and prays for his poor soul. This prayer not only continues with the religious themes present throughout the album, but so too does it describe this man's fragility. I don't mean to suggest that a prayer in the midst of war is a weak or feeble move. I do not think praying for any glimmer of hope while experiencing hell on earth is the least bit shameful. But if we assume that the lover here is not actually ex-military, but rather Joanna uses it to express a certain trauma he experienced in his past, then we see this prayer as an expression of self-pity for having to have endured whatever it is he had to live through. Then, the lines, "Sky was a bread roll soaking in a milk bowl, and when the bread broke, fell in bricks of wet smoke," provides us with another example of this woman's masterful handle of the English language, through a metaphor that continues the exploration of natural order versus mankind. If we picture bread soaked in milk, we can see the way bread disintegrates into little chunks. Joanna uses this image to paint the scene of a sky during a bombing. The sky breaks when bombs drop through the air onto wet, sandy beaches, exploding into clouds of wet smoke. Both bread and milk played important roles in the sustenance of human life early in our history, and the use of this imagery to illustrate the scene of a very modern occurrence that is machine warfare sheds light on the concept of old versus modern, as well as sustenance versus death. After this apt portrait of the war her lover is haunted by, it appears that the man has shaken as a result of this night terror, causing our narrator to wake from her own sleep. Notably, Joanna says that her heart woke and that her heart spoke, which alludes to the idea of leading with emotion over reason. Thinking with your head represents logical thought, whereas thinking with your heart represents following your intuition. And often in bad relationships, these two lines of thought are constantly at odds. You may know that something is wrong in the relationship, but you are unable to act accordingly due to the emotions attached to your significant other. Let's note this as the first inkling that all is not well in the relationship. Lastly, there is a line from the Bible, from the Song of Solomon, which reads, "I slept, but my heart was awake."
And there was a silence you took to mean something rancid, for alive you will evermore be. And the plague of the greasy black engines, a skulking has gone east. Were you left to explain them to me? Released from their hairless and blind cavalry, with your head in your pockets, stubbly running to where I'm unfresh, undressed and yawning. Well, what is this craziness, this crazy talking? You caught some small death when you were sleepwalking. It was a dark.
There is a silence in the man's mind, a peace that he takes to mean the distressing dream is over. Our narrator encourages the man to run and sing. The storm has passed, and he has the rest of his life to live free of it. The airplanes are described as a plague that has left this place, never to return. We pause here to talk about another possible interpretation of this lyric. Though we do not know what the traumatic event that occurred in this man's life is, it is not far-fetched to think it could be a previous relationship. If we entertain this interpretation, this silence could be a period of time after his traumatic relationship that the man takes as a sign that he has fully processed the event and has moved on. Our narrator supports this, and we can interpret her telling the man to run and sing as a way to encourage his pursuit of her. The descriptions of the planes, which we took to represent the trauma, displays our narrator's disdain towards whoever the man was previously with. They're described as plague-like, greasy, and skulking. Joanna assures the man that she is gone for good, but for some reason, the man is left to explain them to her. We can interpret this line as a way to reveal that this man is not actually ready for a new relationship. Despite the supportive words of our narrator, the man still feels the need to talk over and explain what occurred in the past. Constantly talking about your ex in either a positive or negative light is a pretty telltale sign that someone is not over their previous relationship. Talking over a traumatic relationship is both healthy and necessary, but it becomes unhealthy if you are unable to recognize that you are not ready for a new relationship. This inability to recognize your own need for space to grow and mature puts the other in a very dangerous position, an unwinnable one, one where they risk the chance of falling in love with someone who cannot reciprocate. Joanna's quiet delivery of the last, released from their hairless and blind cavalry, is a plea for her man to have fully processed his traumatic past and be in a position to love again. The line about hands in your pockets is a direct reference to the character Jason Compson of the 1927 novel The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner. Jason is introduced to the readers in a scene where he has his hands in his pockets. Later on, another character named Caddy promises Jason a job at the bank, but the job never comes through. Through the rest of the book, Jason never stops blaming Caddy for cheating him out of his future. He spends the rest of his life a cynical man, constantly chasing his insatiable desire for money. In this unhealthy pursuit, Jason seems entirely unaware of the people's lives he affects. He cheats on his wife with a prostitute, all while thinking horribly of that woman, and the immense pressure he puts on his son Quincy eventually leads to his depression and suicide. Tying this knowledge back to our song, we see Joanna relate this character to that of the lover in this song. Whereas Jason Compson's insatiable greed manifests itself in the pursuit of money, the greed of the man in this song seems to manifest in an unquenchable desire for sex, as his hands run to where she is, unfresh, undressed, and yawning. Our narrator speaks up and addresses this craziness. This could be before sex, where she would seemingly address how the man was just talking of his ex and now wants to lay with her, or potentially post-sex, where he continues talking of his ex. Small death is very close to a famous French phrase, le petit mort, which translates directly to the little death. This phrase is used to describe orgasm, and its use here is incredibly clever. This crafty phrase slyly infers intercourse occurring, while also relating sex, the very act that produces life, to death. Not only that, but the word death actually relates us back to the description of the war. We took that to be representative of the man's past trauma, so by relating orgasm to trauma, Joanna seemingly comments on the impact of sex within relationships. Sex is both wonderful and powerful, but altogether dangerous. It is the ultimate vulnerability, the opening up of yourself to another, a very physical and emotional act. The bond that occurs through sex is not entirely explicable because it has very little to do with logic, but rather everything to do with emotion. By relating sex to the trauma of a broken relationship, Joanna implies that sex has a large role in the building of a romantic relationship, and that its power is not to be taken lightly. Walking, it was a dark dream, darling, it's over. The fire breather is beneath the clover. Beneath his breathing, there's cold clay forever. A toothless hound dog choking on a feather. But I took my fishing pole. Continuing. Our narrator tries to get this man to stop talking about his ex by reassuring him that the nightmare is over, or that his past relationship is over. Fire breather should make us think of the previous track, Sawdust and Diamonds. Though not a fire breather, the man in that story set fire to the prairie, and we interpreted that to represent destruction in Joanna's life. The man in this story is almost certainly the same man from the previous song, so there is a great irony in her telling the man, her very own fire breather, that the fire breather is beneath the clover. The narrator then stops addressing the man directly and sings an aside to the audience. She says that beneath his breathing there is cold clay forever. We've seen the use of clay two times before, both times we interpreted it to mean lifelessness, and here it appears to be no different. Beneath his breathing details the heart, which exists deeper than the lungs, and which she describes as lifeless. The fact that this appears to be an aside could indicate that the female character in this song is not aware of this, or, if the character is aware of his lifelessness, we can tie this back to the thinking with logic versus reason complex presented earlier, where she seemingly is aware that this man cannot love her, but continues to pursue him anyway. She then depicts the man as a toothless hound dog choking on a feather, clearly meant to display his feebleness. Here, it is possible that the narrator is underestimating this character, believing him to be a weak man who needs nurturing and poses no threat to her. Let's take a break from interpreting and look at the use of assonance in these lines. The letters EA are present all throughout the stanza. Dream, breather, beneath, breathing feather. Though notable just for how appealing it appears in the lyric sheet, the use of these letters could allude to the easiness she is trying to portray here. She assures the man that the dream is over, and then makes fun of the man to the audience as if to suggest the task of relighting the spark within the man's heart will be so easy. Lastly, we do note that the depiction of the man as a dog is commonly used as a metaphor. Though often used to express viciousness, here our narrator uses it to express his helplessness.
But I took my fishing pole, fearing your fever, down to the swimming hole, where there grows a bitter herb that blooms but one day a year by the riverside. I bring it here. Apply it gently to the love you've lent me. While the river was twisting and braiding, the bait barbed in a string sobbed as it cut through the hustling breeze. And I watched how the water was kneading so neatly, gone trickling, nearly slow to a stop in his heat, in a frenzy, coiling flush along the muscles beneath.
Despite her insulting this man, our narrator goes to fish for him as she fears of his fever. Fishing, though sometimes for sport, is often done for food. This man is not sick from a lack of food, but rather a lack of love. Or at least that's what he desires. In his broken state, the thing he needs for sustenance is love. But not just any love, physical love. And our narrator willingly provides him that. We note that though sex is a two-lane road, the woman here is doing all of the work. This event is not work for the man, perhaps because he desires it so, but for the woman it is like a job which she performs for her man. At this riverside there is a bitter herb that only blooms once a year. We interpreted the whole act of fishing to be her providing this man sex, so the bitter herb that grows by this riverside could be representative of the little bits of love he lends her after or around the times they have sex. They are few and far in between, but every once in a while this man gives her what she desires, emotional love, which she cherishes and adds to her humble collection of this rare artifact. The river is then said to be twisting and braiding. Braiding is something most commonly done to hair, and we remember how the word comb and Emily related the river to hair. This personification doesn't stop there, as the string of the fishing pole is said to sob, and the wind is in a hurry to get somewhere. More important than the meaning of these specific words is the alliteration present. The bees in braiding, bait, and bobbed help to paint a vivid picture of the bait bobbing up and down. The S sound in twisting, string, sobbed, hustling, and breeze create a hiss that resembles the actual noise of a string cutting through wind. Our narrator continues this amazingly descriptive portrait of the scene where the water is kneading neatly. To knead is to work dough or clay, but could also relate to giving a massage. Treacle is basically the British equivalent to molasses, so this adds to the description of the flowing of the river nearly coming to a stop. But the word treacly means to be excessively sentimental, so perhaps the slowing of this river is due to our narrator growing upset with the way it is flowing. The mussels here refer both to the mollusks that are found on the floor of either the river or ocean, while also continuing the personification of the river by describing the riverbed as mussels that push the water forwards. A couple things to point out about these lines. They could be just wonderful visual descriptions of the scene, but it is also possible that these lines are thematically important. The water here could represent the relationship of these two characters. The twisting of the water would then symbolize the difficulties they encounter, so too the heat that nearly slows the river to a halt. Our narrator is fishing in this river for the nourishment of the man. She's finding ways to take care of this man by finding sustenance within the relationship. We also note the incredible assonance present. Yet again, the EA sound is present in kneading, neatly, treacly, nearly, heat, beneath. Just like the last time we heard this assonance, this could represent the easiness with which this woman chores. The river, representing the relationship, is being described as small and controlled. The woman is doing all of the work in the relationship for the man's sake, but at this stage, she seems to be putting on the appearance that she is not at all bothered by it, or that the work is easy. Whether or not this is actually true, we don't know, but it feels safe to assume that something will go wrong in the near future, as this shows no signs of being a healthy relationship. Joanna addresses her lover and confirms their need for physical love. We're told they're restless, referring to their inability to be around each other and not have sex. As I said in the previous episode, unhealthy relationships tend to have a lot of sex, as the physical gratification that comes with sex is the only thing holding the relationship together, and that seems to ring true here. Swaddling is a technique used to care for a baby where you wrap the baby up tight in a blanket to limit the flailing of their limbs. Seaweed ties us back to the water of the previous few lines, which we interpreted to represent the relationship, and this line seems to suggest that the relationship swaddles this man like a baby. There is a caretaker dynamic that is ever-growing here, a particularly disturbing one where sex is how she nurtures this man. The next lines use sea creatures to further the prevalence of sex throughout this verse. Squids shoot ink when they are scared in an attempt to blind their predator and escape. Here, the ink symbolizes semen. This is supported by the fact that he sinks into his crib, not only relating back to the line with the word swaddling, but also referencing the tendency for men to fall asleep after sex. The imagery here is almost gross, and I think we're meant to feel that when we hear it. The strings fade before this verse, allowing us to hear the words very clearly. Things are turning sour in the relationship, as our protagonist is beginning to understand that the only thing they have is sex.
Rowing along among the reeds, among the rushes, I heard your song before my heart had time to hush it. Smell of a stone fruit being cut and being open. Smell of a low and of a lazy cinder smoking. And when the fire moves away, fire moves away, son. Why would you say I was the last one?
Our narrator then describes rowing a boat down the river, and the alliteration of rowing, rushes, and reeds serves to help row us along. We see here a continuation of the relationship as she keeps rowing down the river, as well as the continuation of the woman doing all of the work. With the line, "I heard your song before my heart had time to hush it," we get the admission that our narrator is in trouble. She recognizes that she pursued this love without understanding or recognizing the danger of the situation. A stone fruit is a fruit with a large pit at the center of it, like a cherry. This fruit has soft flesh on the outside with a center that's hard as a rock. There's a couple ways to interpret this. This could be a metaphor for the man in this story. His flesh is soft and sweet, but upon getting to the center of his core, our narrator finds his heart to be made of stone. This fruit could also be a metaphor for our narrator. Her soft flesh does not protect her heart, which the man carves out to take for himself. Either way, this seems to be a metaphor of the damage the man has done to our narrator, whether it be her realizing the lack of love within his heart, or him carving her open and stealing her heart. Following this line, we get the lyric of a low and lazy cinder smoking. This fire, again representing passion, is portrayed as small. It is but a small piece of coal or wood, barely smoking. This could be used to reveal that the fire within the man's heart is almost non-existent. Or it could be denial from our narrator as she plays off the fire within her soul to be small and insignificant. Again, either one furthers the exploration of the damage this man has done. The strings come to a halt, and Joanna plays something akin to a nursery rhyme, a melody so innocent it could be played for a baby. The use of the word son at the end of the line tells us she is speaking to the man, but the fire she speaks of is not just the one she mentioned earlier when she told the man that the fire breather is beneath the clover. This fire is also clearly meant to represent her fire, the man of this story. Despite all of the work she put in and the damage she did to herself, this man goes away. The innocence and purity with which these words are delivered is incredibly moving. There are dense and layered lyrics riddled throughout this album that are truly heartbreaking when you unpack them, but the simplicity and honesty with which these straightforward words are delivered cuts through your heart like a hot knife through butter. She asks her lover, "Why would you say that I was the last one?" And with these words, she captures the sentiments of a million heartbreaks.
Scrape your knee, it is only skin, makes the sound of violins. And when I cut your hair and leave the birds all of the trimmings, I'm the happiest woman among all women.
Joanna then says the words, "Scrape your knee, it is only skin," makes the sound of violins, which completely contrasts the straightforwardness of the previous line. First and foremost, a scraped knee is an injury most prevalent to children who play in the street, and this furthers the feeling of pure innocence. A scraped knee is physically painful, which Joanna refers to as only skin. Why? Because physical pain pales in comparison to emotional pain. Our narrator is giving her everything to this relationship and is getting nothing in return. The hurt this has caused cuts far, far deeper than a scratch on the surface. We can relate this scraped knee back to the physical love prevalent throughout this song so far. The casualness of the delivery of "it is only skin" is very clearly ironic, because the wound caused by sex is not only skin. It is not just the physical action. It is far deeper than that. The next lines read, "And when I cut your hair and leave the birds all of the trimmings, I'm the happiest woman among all women." First and least importantly, birds can use human hair to help build their nest, so this lyric continues the exploration of man's relationship with nature. More relevant is the legendary story this hints at. The story of Samson in the Bible tells the tale of a mighty judge who led and rescued the people of Israel from Philistine oppression. In his youth, Samson displayed near supernatural strength. Unbeknownst to him, God had gifted him this strength through his hair. Though God did not explain why, he insists that Samson not cut his hair, to which Samson happily obliges. One day, walking through the woods, a lion pounced on him, but with his bare hands he slayed it. Samson recognized his impossible strength and sought to use this power for good. Many years and one wife later, having accomplished plenty of remarkable feats, Samson married a Philistine named Delilah. One day, Philistines approach Delilah and offer her great wealth if she shares the secret of Samson's strength. Delilah agrees. From then on, every day she torments her husband, asking him where his great strength came from. A few times, Samson lies to her and tells her things like if he were bound by ropes, he would lose all his strength. Each time, Delilah would try these methods on him while he slept. Each time, Samson would rise with his full might and be completely unaffected by whatever method she tried. Delilah cried to him, "How can you say I love you when you don't trust me?" Finally, Samson concedes and tells her that his hair contains his great strength. Delilah reports this to the Philistine lords, who break into Samson's house, cut his hair, and take him captive. A nice story, but how does this pertain to our song? At this point in the story, we know that the man has all the power in the relationship. Our narrator is wrapped around his finger. Why, then, does she liken herself to Delilah, who takes power back from her lover by betraying him? What reveals the importance of this story is not in the lyrics themselves, but the tone in which they are delivered. Listen again.
Woman among all women.
The way in which Joanna croons these words reveals the irony at play. She whimpers the lines like a scared child. The line is a farce, a lie. She is not Delilah. She does not cut his hair or take back power. Our narrator remains utterly helpless to the will of this man. We'll take a brief break here. I don't want to overload you all with too much information in one sitting. I suggest you pause and perhaps find something else to occupy your attention for a second, or maybe give the song another spin before returning to the podcast. Welcome back to The Deeper You Dive. Before the break, we began our analysis of the colossal song that is Only Skin. In the small amount of it that we covered, we saw how Joanna is telling the tale of a relationship, one where the man has a troubled past that leaves him unable to provide the love Joanna desperately desires from him. Among the strange imagery used in the track, we saw a central theme of water present throughout, with words like river, fishing pole, seaweed, squid, etc. And we also saw the fire from sawdust and diamond return. The last thing we analyzed was where our narrator ironically uses the tale of Samson and Delilah to directly contrast the situation she finds herself in. Let's pick up where we left off.
In the shallow waters, which is as far as I can see, knee deep, trudging along. Song until the night is over. Hold on, hold on, hold your horses back from the fickle dawn. I have got.
In calling the water shallow here, Joanna potentially alludes to the shallowness of their relationship. It is a very physical relationship that seemingly centers entirely around sex. This water stretches as far as she can see. She can see no end in sight to the mess they find themselves in. Despite the shallowness of the water, Joanna finds herself knee-deep trudging along. She sings that a seagull, a bird directly related to water, weeps the words so long and hums a threshing song. The word thresh means to separate grain from a plant. It is the step in harvesting after reaping and before winnowing. Once a harvest is reaped, it is dead. It cannot be undone. Perhaps the seagull hums a threshing song because it knows Joanna's heart is gone from her. She has passed the point of no return. Notably, the first thing that comes up on Google when you search symbolic meaning of seagull is that seagulls represent freedom, independence, and unique character. I do not know how valid this information is, but it would certainly apply to this moment in our song. This seagull, representing our narrator's independence and freedom, cries so long as it flies off into the distance. Our narrator then tells herself to hold on, hold your horses back from the fickle dawn. Hold your horses is a playful way of telling someone to settle down, and its playfulness here contrasts the very serious and harmful subject matter. Fickle means to be changing constantly, especially regarding one's loyalties. It seems here that fickle dawn relates to our narrator's lover, as he is dangerously precarious about his love. At some moments, Joanna can feel his love entirely, and yet in other moments, he is distant and cold. In telling herself to hold on until the night is over, our narrator reveals her belief that this pain she feels is temporary. She has hope that if she endures this period of their relationship, it will get better at some point.
I have got some business out at the edge of town. Candy weighing both of my pockets down till I can hardly stay afloat from the weight of them. And knowing how the common folk condemn what it is I do to you to keep you warm.
Joanna sings that she has some business out at the edge of town. Though we have no way to know what this business is, the fact that it is at the edge of town indicates she doesn't want people to see it. This business could then be her meeting up with her lover, and perhaps she wants to be out of sight of everyone else because others have given her grief about their relationship. It isn't uncommon for good friends to know when a relationship is rotten, and to confront their friend about it in an effort to get them to understand they're being mistreated. If that's what's going on here, our narrator does not adhere to their advice and dismisses their words of caution, but not proudly enough to do it openly. She probably knows that they are right, but is unable to resist this man for one reason or another. She continues by saying that she is carrying candy in her pockets, so much so that she can hardly stay afloat. This candy is used to symbolize her care for this man. Candy is sweet and childlike, but it is unhealthy. Though not childlike, young lust is similarly sweet yet unhealthy. This candy that she uses to care for her man weighs heavy on our narrator, so much so that she can hardly stay afloat. Listen to her voice as she sings the word afloat. It is as if the water is rising around her and she has to tilt her head up to breathe. The following lines are some of the most powerful in the song. The common folk condemning her for what she does to keep this man warm confirms our theory of the candy symbolization. Here, Joanna comments on a very harsh reality that many women face, slut-shaming. Slut-shaming refers to the way in which people react to young, unmarried women having sex. There is a very obvious religious issue. In Christianity, you're not supposed to have sex until marriage. And somehow this concept has been twisted and warped into something very wicked and harmful to women. When a young man has sex with a woman, perhaps even multiple, he's seen as a player or a stud. When a young woman has sex with someone they're not in a relationship with, they're viewed as a whore. For centuries, the idea that women are not to pursue their own sexual desires has persisted, and it is still disturbingly present today. This likely stems from the horribly misogynistic belief that women are just to marry a man and take care of family, but even as we work towards breaking that social norm, slut-shaming persists. What makes these lyrics cut deeper is that Joanna sings knowing how they condemn. Whether or not these people are actually condemning her actions, we see that she has internalized this belief that she will be shamed for her actions. Regardless of what is actually occurring, Joanna displays how young women have to live with this fear. Joanna sings the words, being a woman, and with that phrase, she captures this dilemma perfectly. In this relationship, Joanna finds herself as caretaker, a predominantly effeminate role throughout human history. Whether it be stay-at-home mothers or nurses, society tells us that women are meant to care for others. In our narrator's situation, she is fulfilling this man's sexual desires that he doubtlessly uses to fill the void left in his soul due to past trauma. Despite her attempt to nurse this man because she cares for him, her actions will be condemned by those around her. She, like so many other women, finds herself in an unwinnable predicament.
Spiders, ghosts, hang soaked and dangling silently from
and tiny nooses. Safe from everyone, nothing but a nuisance. Go on now, get it done. Be a woman, be a woman.
Our narrator then turns her attention to the man of the story. Despite her effort and care she provides to him, he is not satisfied by her. Joanna incorporates the Greek myth of Sisyphus. Sisyphus was cursed by Hades with the task of ever rolling a boulder up to the top of a hill, from which it would always fall back down. This continual cycle of performing an act but never achieving the desired result is akin to the man of our story. His gluttonous lust is a poor and dangerous attempt to fill the void left in his soul after the pain of his previous relationship. This insatiable desire can be related to the previous tracks of Monkey and Bear, and especially Sawdust and Diamonds. You can actually hear this myth in Joanna's voice here. Notice how her voice throughout this verse climbs the scale on phrases like, but always up the mountainside, and picking through your pocket lining, only to fall back down again, mimicking the tale of Sisyphus and his boulder. We note a couple other things about this verse. The picking your pocket linings ties back to Jason Compson from The Sound and the Fury. In doing so, we see a contrast between our two characters. The man is picking through his pocket linings. His pockets are all but empty, while our narrator previously was almost drowning from how overburdened her pockets were. We can see this to represent the emotional weight of the relationship. The man is burdening next to nothing, while the weight of the relationship is nearly drowning our narrator. Also, sassafras is a flower that has been used to treat wounds before, so its use here is not just for how beautiful the words scrap of sassafras a Sisyphus sound next to each other, but actually symbolizes the way this man uses sex with other women to attempt to mend his wound, which explains why our narrator is clearly upset when she discovers this in his pocket. For the longest time, I thought that this next stanza was actually Emily speaking to Joanna, explaining how she has felt her pain before in an effort to get her to get over the relationship. This would then tie back to the song Emily, where Joanna's sister's attempts of helping her in her time of need proved to be half-hearted and feeble. But, considering the narrator says little sister, and Emily is the youngest of the siblings, this interpretation doesn't quite fit. Therefore, I think this is Joanna speaking to her little sister. Emily appears to have had some type of breakup, and Joanna seems to be reassuring her that he will be back again, not just as a way to support her sister, but also in an attempt to convince herself that her man will be back again. This closely mimics the irony in the previous lines, "The fire breather is beneath the clover." Joanna tells these two separate characters that everything is and will be okay, despite not being in any position to make those claims, a very fitting verse on a song that has already relied much on irony. The lines about blossom broke and wet after the rain likely symbolize Emily's breakup. Blossoms are the flowers of cherry trees, and flowers have historically been used to symbolize women, so it appears Joanna sees that Emily is broken following the end of their relationship. If we want to take it a step further and continue with the theme of the dangers of sex, flowers have often been used to symbolize a woman's virginity. The term deflower has been used to describe the taking of a woman's virginity, so we could potentially interpret the blossoms broke in this same manner. This would then mean that Joanna sees her sister experiencing something very similar to what she herself is going through, the emotional promises that come with sex being broken. She encourages Emily by explaining that she has washed 1,000 spiders down the drain. In Joanna's 2010 album, Have One on Me, Joanna uses spiders to represent both parties of a toxic relationship, and its use here seems to be similar. Though they do lots of good, spiders are a nuisance to pretty much everyone. They always find their way into homes and apartments. The casualness of getting rid of a spider in real life is contrasted in the manner in which they are removed here. They are hung from a cherry tree. It's totally impractical to hang a spider, but the disturbing visual really comes off and expresses the appalling situation both sisters find themselves in. She declares that these spiders were nothing but a nuisance, and that having dealt with them, they are dead and done. But we know this isn't true. The spiders still hang from the blossoming cherry trees. These memories and scars of loves long past do not go away. Another possible interpretation of these stanzas is that these words could have been spoken to Joanna from her older brother. In this interpretation, his attempt to console his little sister reveals skeletons in his closet as he explains how he has washed 1,000 spiders down the drain. This interpretation strengthens the criticism of the violence of men throughout this song. A man whom she trusts and loves, her own brother, reveals to Joanna that he has done the same thing to others as this man is doing to her, and the ironic casualness of it all begs the listener to ask, "How could you do such a thing?" We see Joanna's vocal performance follow the same rising and falling from the previous verse about Sisyphus. But here, the myth does not relate to her lover's continual attempt to fill the void in his soul, but potentially both her and her sister's continual effort to build a stable relationship with a man only to be constantly deserted by them. This idea is expanded upon with a repetition of the phrase, "be a woman." Earlier, the phrase, "being a woman," saw Joanna express her struggles of trying to be a womanly caretaker to this man, but fearing the judgment of those around her, ultimately commenting on the plight of all women who have given in to the sexual advances of a man only to be ridiculed for it, all the while not receiving adequate care and attention from the man. Here, "be a woman" does something similar but perhaps more heartbreaking. "Be a woman" is akin to the phrase, "man up." It is a statement telling someone to be brave or tough. With the context of this song, particularly the previous lines of the spiders, in her lamenting delivery of these words, this phrase takes on a different meaning. It appears to me that either Joanna is telling her sister and herself, or worse yet, her brother says, that this is the life of a woman, that women are damned to always give more than they receive, that she must endure this pain as millions of women have endured across centuries. I certainly don't mean to suggest that all women are powerless to the will of the men they choose to be with, but I do believe that this is what Joanna is expressing at this moment, due to her own personal experiences. She has washed 1,000 spiders down the drain. In her life, all she has ever known is these men who do not give as good as they get. Lastly, before we continue with Only Skin, I think it's relevant to visit a version of this song that was played live well before East came out. If you want to listen to this song, go on YouTube and search Joanna Newsom, "Be a Woman." The post says that the recording occurred at the Quiet Window Lights performance in January of 2004. The small song shares the same instrumentation as this part of Only Skin and many of the same lyrics and sentiments. The part of this 2-minute recording that is important for us is the words, "Blessing all the birds that died so I could live. Be a woman, be a woman." I believe this version helps support my interpretation of the version on Only Skin. Perhaps in this version of the song, Joanna is in a relationship pondering the women before her that were left heartbroken by this man. I think Joanna here struggles with coming to terms with the fact that it is only through the dying of these birds that she was able to be with him, speculating when she herself will be shot down by this man. The birds dying evoke a similar feeling to the spiders hanging, and again I think the use of the phrase "be a woman" here touches on the inevitable horribleness of loves that didn't last. This version never made it to a proper recording, but I still think it's a beautiful verse that helps provide further context to the lyrics from Only Skin.
We felt the spray of the winds, we decided to stay till the time rose too far. We weren't afraid because we knew what you are, and you know that we know what you are. Awful and total, incalculable, and discreetness and sorrow. Barbalo, super seek our order, up in the bow. Harlan Road, teeth and impalpable, bit of leather while yarrow, heather and hollyhock awkwardly moat along the shore.
Our narrator then sings that they felt the spray of the waves but decided to stay till the tide rose too far. This paints the image of her and her lover standing on an island together. The water here represents sadness, pain, despair, etc. The two felt these emotions coming. They were aware that the relationship was going sour, but they did not choose to get off of the island to safety, opting instead to potentially drown together. The line, "We were afraid because we know what you are, and we know that you know what you are," is an intriguing one. On face value, it expresses how our narrator is becoming aware that this man is toxic, and that the man himself knows this too. This line always makes me think of the myth of Ys, particularly the Red Knight. Remember, the Red Knight was so handsome that Tahut decided not to kill him. In his persuasive power over Tahut, he convinced her to steal her father's key to the city. Upon opening the gates, the Red Knight revealed himself to be the devil. This could be applied to the lyrics of these lines, where the man is evil or toxic, and also is the reason for the water rushing inwards. Before moving on, we're going to play that last stanza one more time. Listen closely for the rhyming, consonants, assonance, and alliteration present.
Awful and tolo, incalculable, and discreetness and sorrow, barbelos, superseekerod, unappenable, tall and roe, teeth and impalpable, bit of leather while yarrow, heather and hollyhock, awkwardly moat along the shore.
We're going to do something we have done a bit of this season, but maybe not as much as we could have. The rhyming of this verse is so dense that I feel it deserves its own minor analysis. We'll get to the potential meaning of these lyrics later, but for now, let's really dive in to see just how talented this woman's pen is. Let's start simple. We have the end rhymes of atoll, sorrow, bellow, bow, and yarrow, with a slant rhyme of shore. Adding on to that scheme, you have the I rhyme of cow. Then, we have some simple alliteration present. Awful atoll, incalculable indiscreetness, ball below, Sybil sea cow, toddle and teeth, and then heather and hollyhock. We have two different consonants noises throughout this stanza, the B or P sounds in the words incalculable, ball below, Sybil, bow, impalpable, and bit. The other consonants present is the L sound throughout each line of this stanza. Awful, atoll, incalculable, ball, bellow, all, toddle, roll, impalpable, leather, while, hollyhock, awkwardly, molt, along. Honestly, this stanza would be impressive if it was nonsensical and had no part to play thematically, but of course it does. An atoll is a ring-shaped island formed of coral, so this should make us think back to the lines, "We felt the spray of the waves, we decided to stay." Here, that island is being described as awful, it's gone rotten. Indiscreetness means that something is blatant, so this line refers to the sadness that is both incalculable and open for all to see. So strong is this despair that she cannot even attempt to mask it. To bawl is to weep, and to bellow is to emit a deep, low roar. A Sybil is a woman in ancient times who was said to utter oracles and prophecies of God. I think Joanna uses this to relate to her own work, her songs being the oracles, and the contrast of putting it next to the sea cow makes it seem like a self-deprecating line. Done up in a bow contrasts the sea cow lyric, while also tying us back to the fancy clothes from Monkey and Bear. To toddle is to move like a toddler, short and unsteady steps, and its use here is to display the immaturity and youthfulness of both of these young lovers. Teeth an impalpable bit of leather refers to the method of biting down on leather during an excruciatingly painful medical operation. The idea is that, when in severe pain, your jaw clenches down with force, so much so that you can seriously damage your teeth, so the leather strip served as a way to protect your teeth. The pain our narrator is going through is not that of a medical procedure, but of emotional turmoil brought about by this relationship and the loss of her child-to-be. The last lines describe yarrow, heather, and hollyhock, three floral species, awkwardly molting along the shore. Yarrow is said to represent love, especially everlasting love. Heather represents good luck, admiration, and protection. Hollyhock symbolizes the cycle of life. They are found frequently at funerals or at events relating to fertility. Each of these concepts are prevalent throughout this album. We've seen how love has manifested in Monkey and Bear, Sawdust and Diamonds, and now Only Skin. We saw how Joanna's protection, the borders of her kingdom, faded in Emily as she struggled to find out what to believe in. And we have seen the cycle of life tragically presented in Sawdust and Diamonds, with the potential birth and death of her daughter-to-be, and this concept of the circle of life will be further explored in the last track of the album. To molt is to shed skin, like a snake or lizard who sheds their skin once it starts to grow weathered. These flowers molting represents these concepts turning sour, her protective borders fading, the beginning of a new life cut short, and her romantic love becoming detrimental to her well-being. The only other thing that I can draw from this line is that none of these flowers are found near the water, so them being on the shore finds them out of place. Also, flowers do not molt, further adding to this awkwardness. After this impressive and delicate display of her rhyming ability, Joanna sings simple but powerful words. Are you mine, my heart, mine anymore? She asks whether or not she is in control of her emotions anymore, fearing that the seagull was right when it suggested that our narrator's heart was already taken from her. At this point in the song and album, we know that so much has already happened to this young woman. She has had an existential crisis, struggled managing relationships of both family members and with romantic partners, as well as losing her child. This pain has no doubt weakened our narrator, and she knows it. Here, she finds herself questioning whether or not she has any control over her life anymore. We'll stop our analysis here for this episode. This episode has already been incredibly long, and I think this is a good place to split up the analysis. So, briefly, we'll do a little conclusion about the song so far. The song is clearly about a relationship, but we can see it goes a bit deeper than that. Joanna seems to be detailing her own tale of the violence of men, how love, particularly sex, is not a game that can be taken lightly. Alright, that's all for now. Make sure to tune in next time as we conclude our analysis of Only Skin.